Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So, over the weekend, 3 days worth of headlines were dominated by Boris Johnson, and not all of it was good. In fact, much of it wasn't good. Katie, is the Boris Johnson campaign unravelling?
I think we have a situation where what the Boris campaign had envisioned for the first few days of the Tory membership campaign, which they in many respects thought would be the easy bit after the parliamentary stage was done, convincing MPs who are a bit sceptical of Boris Johnson to get on side. We know Boris Johnson is popular with the grassroots, so this should be, in theory, the easy bit. But he has come under a lot of scrutiny, a lot of negative headlines, and that's all really what got kickstarted on Friday night when a Guardian story broke saying that police had been called to an incident at Boris Johnson's girlfriend Carrie Simmons' house because they heard loud shouting at night, plates being thrown. The police left and said there was nothing to pursue there, but that hasn't stopped the neighbour then giving the recording to the paper. They haven't released the recording, but parts of that fight have come in, and I think it's just led to a weekend of news. Some looking at the neighbour's complaints, the neighbour's motives, but others also looking at what this means in terms of Boris Johnson's character and also his relationship. And no matter what you take of it, I think everyone can agree that from the Boris campaign perspective, this is just bad news, at the very least a distraction, but potentially something worse, because it has meant that you're seeing lots of Conservative politicians use this as a way to try and bring up parts of Boris Johnson's pitch that they're not happy with. So you've had lots of people say Liam Fox, who's supporting Jeremy Hunt, and others say that Boris Johnson should be answering questions on why the police were called by neighbours, because this is a character issue and he wants to be Prime Minister. Now, at the first hustings, which was on Saturday, Boris Johnson refused to answer any questions and it's saying it was a private matter, and actually what the audience and the membership want to know is more about his policies. But I think it is building into this overall effect that he is, which means people can say quite easily he is evading scrutiny. And you see that now with the fact that there is a debate going on this week that Boris Johnson is yet to do.
James, over the weekend, former Foreign Secretary Sir Malcolm Rifkin said that Boris should have just said it in one liner, yes, couples have rows, and move on. Do you think Boris should have at least acknowledged it instead of trying to avoid the question 4 or 5 times?
I think the fact that the police were called changes the situation and the dynamic. But I think in a weird way, actually, Boris Johnson could have used that to say, look, you know, the police were called and they turned up and they decided that everyone was safe, right, and that there were no concerns apparent, you know. I think, frankly, there is a slight arrogance in people trying to substitute their judgment from a distance for that of the police officers who are on the scene attending. I also think, you know, it is obviously, if you hear people having a row which is, reaches a certain level, volcanic level, I think as a citizen it is, and you have tried to contact them to see what is happening and they're not answering, you can see why people would contact the police, and I think it is the right thing to do in that instance. But the fact that these people then, having contacted the police, having been told by the police that there were no concerns apparent, then decided to go to a newspaper, that inevitably cast doubt on their motives. I think if you were purely concerned about your neighbour's safety, your response to being told by the police it was all fine would not be to pick up the phone to a newspaper. But I think one part of the issue is that Boris Johnson has, throughout his political career, been determined to keep his private life private and refused to answer any questions on it, believing that if he answered one question, you know, the thread would be pulled apart. So he has resisted that. I think the other greater problem, as Katie was alluding to, is, you know, this has thrown his campaign onto the back foot and meant it's easier for the Hunt campaign to say, well, where is he? And there's also more newspaper interest in the question of where is he? And I think one of the other slight surprises to the Johnson campaign is quite how hard Jeremy Hunt is punching us. You know, Katie points out on Coffee House this morning, you know, this is not the campaign in multiple respects that they were hoping. As I wrote on whatever night was the last night, Thursday night, when the results were read out in Boris's office, you know, he wasn't there, but in Boris's office, when Jeremy Hunt's score was read out, which came before Boris Johnson's, and it was clear that Hunt had beaten Gove, this big cheer went up because this was the person that they wanted to face. Now, I still think that that judgment is correct, because I still think that even though Boris Johnson's private life has been chucked back into the spotlight, I still think that trying to sell Jeremy Hunt, someone who voted for Remain in 2016, someone whose initial reaction to the referendum result was to advocate a second referendum, someone who has been in cabinet throughout the Brexit delays that Theresa May's premiership has seen, trying to sell him to the Tory grassroots is still going to be a very hard ask. But I think one of the other things to remember is this isn't just about this contest. This is about what happens afterwards. And lots of Boris's closest allies and supporters hope that he would win really big with the members. And that would be one of the ways that they would get recalcitrant Tory MPs to give him a chance and to accept ultimately his Brexit policy by saying, look, you know, this is the settled will of the party. If this result ends up being much narrower than expected, you know, I think even a 60-40 win for Boris, which in normal circumstances would be very comfortable, would be seen as giving him slightly less authority than people expected him to have on Thursday night before all this took place.
And Katie, just looking at those leadership hustings in Birmingham on Saturday, how did Jeremy Hunt do?
So Jeremy Hunt, I think, has benefited from low expectations and the fact that it was very clear for the past couple of weeks that the candidate Boris Johnson's team wanted to make the final two was Jeremy Hunt. And this idea that he isn't as skilled a debater as Michael Gove, that he would be more gentle. The Times editorial today calling Boris Johnson a coward slightly undermines that. But there was that sense. So I think that Jeremy Hunt came across better than many expected in the first hustings. And that's in part because he had very detailed answers to questions. And I think one of the themes we're going to see over the next couple of weeks is the fact that they have very different styles of to politics, but specifically the fact that Boris Johnson doesn't like to get into detail and so far has refused to give too many details on a lot of the policy ideas, a lot of issues with Brexit and domestic. Jeremy Hunt, meanwhile, is happy to give very specific answers. Mm. What exactly he wants to change about the withdrawal agreement, how exactly he would try and do it. It means in a way it can be easier to criticise because you can say, well, are you sure you're more charming than Theresa May, if that's your main strategy for getting the change? But I think he does seem like he's more straight down the line on those answers. And in the first hustings, Boris Johnson clearly had the crowd on his side, and I think they were willing him to do well. But he didn't give specifics in the way that Jeremy Hunt did. And there was some continuing confusion when it comes to Boris Johnson's Brexit position over whether leaving the EU by the end of October is really a red line. And he told Ian Dale, who was chairing the hustings, that it was eminently feasible. Then we had a situation where, I think in his Telegraph column today, he appears to have gone further on the update, saying that that not only is it possible, they also will leave by that date. So I think there's always the space to read what you want, but I just think on certain issues, Boris Johnson could find himself in trouble. And I don't think to the point that he at the moment is not going to win this role of Prime Minister. But if he's asked about, for example, HS2 and its potential review, or Heathrow and its leak case, I think there's going to be an appetite as the contest goes on for him to get more specific and give more details. And it's, at the moment, it's not entirely clear if that's something he's willing to give. I think some Boris Johnson supporters, so MPs who were supporting him, felt that there was a reason he'd be a bit vague in the parliamentary rounds, because he just needed to get through that. That's the hardest bit. And then once he was back to the membership stage, he would be able to do more media in a way, because at that point you would start to build your profile. Not that he needs to build it particularly, but you would start to establish what Prime Minister Boris Johnson would look like. Now, part of the reason he might not have done that so far is because clearly what happened on Friday has meant all the questions would be about one thing. But I do think if you keep up this direction of travel, it could eventually build up to a bigger picture, a negative one of him avoiding scrutiny and answers, when compared to someone next to him who, yes, is less exciting in many ways, is doing that, the optics might not be good.
So James, do you think the Boris campaign does have to change tack? Will he be doing more media appearances and giving more details?
I think it should change tack for a simple reason, which is Boris Johnson isn't happy playing the kind of political approach he's taking at the moment. He likes to be on the front foot. And this very defensive, I'm not going to give anything away, I'm not going to make a mistake approach, doesn't sit naturally with him. And as Katie said, you can understand why that was the approach for the MPs round. He just needed to get through that. I think now he needs to score some runs. I think also he needs to do something else, which is they need to get back on the front foot, because the Johnson campaign, as I say in the magazine cover story this week, was a kind of uneasy coalition of different interest groups, right? And there are lots of people fighting for Boris's ear, and that's always kind of the way he's liked it. But the danger is that when things go wrong, those tensions ramp up between the different factions in the campaign. And that can be very detrimental. So I think he does need to kind of start making his arguments more crisply, more clearly. And I think he needs to get on the front foot. I think one thing to watch is, I think there are lots of people in the Johnson camp who now feel that, you know, Jeremy Hunt made his decision over the last 48 hours or so about how to fight this campaign. And so Boris Johnson now needs to go on the attack. I think there were some people who on Thursday night thought this campaign was going to be done with lots of, Jeremy's done wonderful, sterling work as Foreign Secretary. He's been great, you know, definitely big job, kind of thing. And now,
dead ringer.
I think that there are more people who basically think he's got to really go for him on the fact that, you know, as one of Boris Johnson's closest allies said to me this morning, you know, Jeremy Hunt would delay Brexit indefinitely. Obviously, the Hunt campaign would say that was an unfair charge, but I think you will see more aggression from Boris Johnson. I think this is, so I think the blue on blue element of this contest is going to ramp up quite significantly.
So not quite the boring, straightforward leadership hustlings that we were expecting in the members round. James and Katie, thanks very much. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on all the usual routes, and do stick with us throughout this exciting time. You can also send us an email on what you think on podcast@spectator.co.uk. Thanks for listening, and do join us again tomorrow.